Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Well, we got a surprise for you. It's not Newell. Newell's got the day off today. I'm Don Dubuque, normally heard on Saturday mornings from 5 to 7 a.m. with the Outdoor Show, and filling in for Newell today. And, man, we got a lot to talk about. Baseball, we'll be talking with Jeff Palermo and Chris Blair about the postseason possibilities. Also, the big weekend matchup we have beginning tonight with Texas A&M. And we're also going to talk about the U.S. military, the Army enlistment. The recruitments are up. We'll talk to Jim Blythe with the Veterans Impact Show about that. Also, we'll talk about the Gulf of America versus Gulf of Mexico. Which do you call it? And by the way, the red snapper season opening yesterday, and we'll get some reports for you tomorrow on how that went. Then we're going to talk with Ronnie Rance, who is the president and CEO, director of Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Also, Chris Lecoq, who is the TV senior director for the Louisiana Sportsman Hall of Fame Award Ceremony production. And we'll talk to some of this year's recent inductees. In addition to, we don't have him to talk with today, but Nick Saban will be accepting his award. And also Glenn Gilbo, the editor of Tiger Rag magazine, Robin Daniels, the wife of the late WGNO sports director Ed Daniels, and Louisiana's winningest coach and athletic director Joe Sherman. We'll hear from them and get their reactions to their induction upcoming next month into the Louisiana Sportsman's Hall of Fame. Right now, I will talk to Jeff Palermo. He is the Louisiana Radio Network News and Sports Director and WWL.com LSU columnist. Jeff, thanks for joining us this morning. Which of those hats are you wearing? It's game day, so you're wearing your LSU purple and gold?
Yes, and tomorrow's election day, so I got, we're following that and plenty of other stuff on the news side as well, but a lot going on at this time of the year, and it sounds like you got a fun show planned today, Don.
Yes, it is. I love talking about LSU baseball, and you may recall you and I and some others had conversations preseason about the prospects for LSU this year, and I think a lot of that has come true. They're almost the same place they were ranked early, and that rarely happens. As far as surprises, what would be your biggest surprise for this year's team or an individual?
Well, biggest surprise... I think probably the two freshmen that have made a huge impact on this team, Derek Curiel. Now, there were some people saying, hey, Derek Curiel could be the next Dylan Cruz. And that's pretty lofty right there, because Dylan Cruz is probably a guy that there should be some sort of recognition, whether it's his jersey retired or something there when it's all said and done at Alec Box Stadium for the three great years that he had at LSU, and then, of course, leading LSU to a national championship in 2023. So you were hearing about this Derek Curiel kid, and they're saying, hey, he could be the next Dylan Cruz, and he's going to start in left field just like Dylan Cruz did his freshman season. And this kid has been just absolutely unbelievable. Not only as a hitter, as a leadoff hitter, that's been so big for this team because they struggled with finding a leadoff hitter last season. His play in left field has been great. His ability to get on base, he had that long stretch of getting on base, I think 43 consecutive games before it was snapped on Saturday. And then ever since then, he has not been He has not recorded an out since that on base streak was snapped on Saturday, and he's 8 for 8 or something like that. And I think it's like 6 of 6 with hits, but 2 walks in there. So 6 of 6 with 2 walks. And what he has done has just been absolutely fantastic. He's been a table setter for LSU's more experienced hitters like Jared Jones and Daniel Dickerson and guys like Ethan Frey. And then the other freshman is Kaysen Evans, and what he's done. All the talk about William Schmidt as the big freshman pitcher that was coming onto LSU's campus, and Schmidt has had his struggles, in particular in SEC play, but Kaysen Evans has been just flat-out dominant. And when they needed a big start on Sunday, after losing a tough game on Saturday to Tennessee, the kid delivers 6 great innings. He gives up 2 runs in the first inning and then puts up a bunch of zeros. He's been absolutely outstanding out of the bullpen, putting out rallies, just giving LSU chances to win. And really between Evans and Zach Cowan, those two guys, and what they've done out of the bullpen this season, to me, is a big reason why LSU has been able to live up to those lofty preseason predictions that you were talking about in the preseason rankings. I mean, this was a consensus preseason top 5 team, and here they are ranked as high as number 2 by D1 Baseball and Baseball America.
And Jeff, conversely, as we head into the SEC tournament, what are your biggest concerns for the Tigers? What could be some problematic or some stumbling blocks for them?
Well, I think, they're still trying to develop some other bullpen arms here. They're still trying to figure out who Jay Johnson can really rely on in the NCAA tournament. I mean, your two starters, Cade Anderson and Anthony Ianson, are certainly two guys you can count on. Zach Cowan has been great. Kaysen Evans has been great. And then other guys have shown the ability to be really good, and then there's other times where they haven't been all that great. Maverick Rizzi is a kid that comes to mind, a freshman that has looked good in some outings, and other outings he hasn't looked that great. I mentioned William Schmidt. Jared Newt has been a good guy. DJ Primo has been a nice left-hander that's come out of the bullpen. I think that's someone that Jay can rely on. So I think it's just finding, really determining those roles. And if you're going to use Kaysen Evans as a starter, and that's still to be determined even this weekend, they're going to kind of play it by ear every weekend. If you're going to use him as a starter, that means some guys are going to have to step up. Some of the young pitchers in that bullpen are going to have to step up. And then I think the other concern, and I think this is for any team that it gets, especially when you get into a short series, like a super regional series, you just don't want the bats to go cold. I mean, we saw what happened to LSU at Auburn. LSU's a more talented team than Auburn. But LSU couldn't hit with runners in scoring position in that weekend, and they got swept. And that's how dreams die for college baseball teams, where they just have an unlucky weekend or just a bad weekend at the plate, and that ends their season. And there's been a lot of good teams under Paul Mainieri's regime that were really good all season long and then just had a couple of games where offensively they couldn't do it. And they end up losing, and their season comes up short of what their ultimate goals were. So, but that's always a concern whenever you're playing in this game of baseball that is built around failure and how to respond to failure.
Steven Milam has had a couple of tough games. Yeah. Does that concern you, or you think that's he's going to come out of that quickly, maybe tonight?
Well, we saw last year when he gets hot, he is a tough guy to get out. I mean, he got absolutely scorching hot in the SEC tournament last year, carried the Tigers to the tournament championship game, and really hit well in the Chapel Hill Regional. I think what you look at with Milam is, one, keep playing the great defense he's playing at shortstop. I think that's when you're playing a premier position defensively, that's what you want out of him. You know, same thing with Luis Hernandez. You want him to be defensively a catcher as good as he possibly can be. And if he's able to hit a home run for you, or if he's able to go 2 for 4 for you in a day, that's lagniappe. I mean, that's what you're hoping for. But when you're in a premier defensive position like shortstop, you want that guy to be nails out there. And Milam has been that. I think offensively, you know, he got off to a bit of a slow start at the beginning of the season, and then during non-conference play, he turned it up a bit. And, yeah, in SEC play, it hasn't been great. But I think you know what's in there. And I don't think Jay Johnson's losing any sleep over the fact that he's hitting around 200 in SEC play, because they know this guy can get on a heater. And he's had some big hits. I mean, it was he hit the three-run homer on Friday night against Tennessee. He had a big home run against Alabama when LSU rallied. So there's been times where he's come up big for him. It just hasn't been as consistent as I think most people thought going into a sophomore season.
You know, I got to spend some time with both Milam and Jones. They're actually roommates, and we took them alligator hunting and took them whale hunting and out the line. They are just a great couple of guys. I got to believe Bear Jones, if there were a most improved award, and he didn't have far to go to become great as it was, but he has just come so much further. Defensively, he's improved, and certainly with that stick in his hand.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And he's been another guy, you know, the Auburn series. I was just talking about the Auburn, referring to the Auburn series where LSU got swept. And one of the reasons why they got swept is because he had one hit over the weekend. And so he had that struggle there. And he's probably, once SEC play has started, he has been chasing a little bit more. And he's really the big home run threat for teams. So teams are not going to pitch, you know, for whatever reason. Tennessee grooved him a fastball at 1:10 in the morning on Saturday, and he blasted it 450 feet. But other than that pitch, most of the time they're pitching out of the zone to Jones. They are daring him to swing at pitches that are not strikes. And unfortunately, I think Jared Jones there for a bit kind of got out of his way, where he was very selective, especially during the non-conference portion of the season, where he was really just swinging at strikes, and he was either hammering those pitches or hitting them the other way if the pitch was on the outside part of the plate, and he was driving in runs that way, and he was a very productive hitter. And as Jay Johnson said, I think up until that Auburn series, he was in line for player of the year consideration. Now, he has slumped a little bit, but still, he's a big part of this offense, and he needs to be a guy that is a run producer and a guy that can hit the ball over the fence every now and then, because he's really the one guy that in this offense that I think when opposing teams scout LSU, he's the first name that comes up. I think even more so than Derek Curio, just because of the damage Jones can do, where he can drive in 2, 3, or 4 runs at a time, you know, with one swing at the bat.
You know, there's been some discussion among LSU fans whether it's best to pull for Arkansas to continue to upset Texas, or is it better for Texas to beat Arkansas, which would kind of ensure LSU a higher position in the seeding. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's you know, I was torn watching that game last night that Arkansas beat Texas 9-0. And for, you know, Texas has been running away with the division or the conference standings. Or first place. I mean, they had like a 3 or 4 game lead over maybe even 5. Yeah, because they were 19-2, and LSU and Arkansas are 14-7. So they had a 5 game lead for first place heading into last night's game. And then Arkansas beat them pretty bad, 9-0. I think the regular season championship is probably, I don't think LSU can make up that much ground. 4.5 games in 9 games. That's pretty tough. And I think LSU is in a good position right now. They're going to finish, unless they really fall off the map here, they're going to finish in the top 4 in the Southeastern Conference, and that will give them a bye all the way to either Thursday or Friday in the SEC tournament. And I think if LSU finishes in the top 4 in the SEC standings, that's going to give them a top 8 super regional. So whether they win the conference or not, yeah, it's great. You can put the banner up, or, you know, whatever you want to do, is say that you're number 1 in the SEC during the regular season. I think the postseason, what happens there, is much more important. But I kind of look at it more about next weekend when LSU hosts Arkansas, because Arkansas has lost 3 series in a row heading into this matchup against Texas. And so is this series for Arkansas against Texas, is this going to kind of wake them up a little bit, and they're going to get on a heater, and they're going to come into the box next weekend really confident? I mean, That could happen. I don't know. I think sometimes those are things you can't control. I think as fans, you get all wrapped up into it. But let's face it, LSU's a really good team. Arkansas is a really good team. And then as we saw in the Tennessee series, momentum only carries you so far, right? I mean, LSU wins a dramatic game on Saturday morning. They score 6 runs in the 9th. And then what happens later in the day? They lose. They give up 6 runs in the 8th inning. Tennessee has the momentum after winning that second game of the series. They score the first 2 runs in the game 3 of the series. It looks like it's going to be a tough day for LSU. What do? They end up run ruling Tennessee. So momentum shifts pretty quickly in baseball. And it's a much faster sport than I think most people really give it credit for. So whatever happens this weekend between LSU and A&M and Texas and Arkansas, I don't know how much that will matter on, I think that series starts on Friday. I don't know how much that will matter when LSU and Arkansas meet next weekend at the Box.
Got it. Jeff, thanks so much for your insight. Always a pleasure talking with you. You're so knowledgeable about LSU. And just one last thought. You were around watching the 2009 team. Any comparisons with this team?
Ooh, that 2009 team. Yeah, I could see it just because there were some young guys on that team that really helped out some of the veterans. The Mikey Matooks, the Austin Nolas. I mean, there were DJ LeMahieu. There were some really young players that really meshed well with some of the older players on that team. And that team also, I think, pitching-wise, was known for the two-headed monster that they had in Lewis Coleman and Anthony Renato. But I think this team has a deeper pitching staff than the 09 team and the 2023 team. Now, they don't have anybody like Paul Skeens, but, I mean, Cade Anderson, he's doing a pretty good impression. He's third in the country in strikeouts. He's been really good this season.
I don't know if there is anybody like a Paul Skeens. That's for sure.
Unicorn.
Jeff,
unicorn.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much. We appreciate
All right.
it. See you,
you
next
too,
time.
You too, Don. Have a great one.
All right, Jeff Palermo, WWL.com, LSU columnist. We come back after this break. We'll be joined by the voice of the LSU Tigers. He'll be calling the game tonight against Texas A&M. Chris Blair, your thoughts, your comments. How far will LSU go? SEC championship, regionals, or will they win it all? 504-260-1870. That's our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. I'm Don Dubuque in for Newell Norman on the Big 870 WWL.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
And WWL is your home for LSU baseball. In fact, at 5:30 this evening, you'll be hearing him do the pregame and the first pitch a little after 6 o'clock. I'm talking about the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, who joins us now. Chris, are you at Bryan College Station in Texas already?
No, actually still cruising through, on our way over from Baton Rouge. We left campus early this morning, so... I hate to have to miss out on a couple extra days in beautiful Bryan College Station, but I'll manage.
Well, how was that 1:30 a.m. game the other night? Were you holding up pretty good? I got to tell you, I didn't make it. I had to see the replay the next day.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, obviously you kind of forget once the game gets going. I mean, just simply because it was kind of as advertised, the opening game. You know, we didn't start till 9:55 Friday night, but... You know, Liam Doyle was Liam Doyle, and Cade Anderson was Cade Anderson, and you know, you had to wait for the big ending there in the bottom of the ninth inning, and you know, it was amazing. Kudos to the fans. I mean, you know, during that entire delay, it looked like the majority of people had had left, and certainly I understand why. You make your plans based on a 6:30 first pitch, and suddenly it's 9 o'clock. But once the game got started, you know, suddenly the grandstand started filling up, and, you know, the diamond deck and the left field landing had a lot of people in it. And it was quite amazing. I mean, you can go back and listen to it at, you know, after 1 a.m. when Jared Jones sent that ball to Nicholson over the batter's eye. I mean, it was, you know, it was hard to tell that it was 1:30 in the morning.
Well, a guy who gets up and has to be live and alert at 5 a.m. to do an outdoor radio show on Saturday mornings, I really appreciate when the games start at 6, as opposed to 6:30 or even 7. It just gives a little bit of extra time. What determines the start times on those games? Why are some at 6 and some at 6:30 and some at 7?
Well, as my predecessor Jim Hawthorne wisely said years ago, TV runs our lives. And so it's all based on, you know, where you fall, where you're on, you know, ESPN, ESPN2, SEC Network, or whether you're on the SEC Network Plus streaming. And then they just kind of line up each game. You know, it's kind of the conference and the wise people at ESPN. So that's they tell us when we start.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed about this year's team and looking at the coaching dilemma, I call it a dilemma because it appears it's hard for Jay Johnson to come up with a regular starting lineup. He has got so much talent, and that is a great problem to have. And going back to old Skip Bertman's philosophy, he said he would like to start, he always starts his best nine, not necessarily the nine best, meaning the ones that complement each other in a nine-man squad that present the best team is the one he goes with, not necessarily the nine best players. How do you think Coach Johnson's doing in managing this dilemma of who do you play and who do you bench?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is it's a challenging proposition. And again, I think they've done a tremendous job, speaking of Jay and the staff, of being able to not only assemble this type of talent, but for the most part, you know, you look at a guy like Josh Pearson, who obviously grew up wanting to play for the Tigers. But, you know, Josh is a guy who really, since his freshman year, you know, probably could transfer, go somewhere. Probably chances are he'd be an everyday guy. So the ability for Coach Johnson to really emphasize big team, little me in 2025, and really he's been able to do it since getting here, I think is – you know, he needs to be complimented for, because that's not easy to do. And, you know, I think as we get closer, you know, with three SEC weekends remaining, I think you can pretty much, if, you know, maybe not in ink, but very dark number two pencil, I think you can put in the lineup that he thinks now is the best combination. And again, we've seen over the last two weekends alone, not to mention really all season, that, you know, LSU has the ability in certain positions to, you know, against certain matchups, certain parts of the game, depending on the score and the situation, you know, be able to go to the bench and put a guy at the plate. And they've been able to come through. And that just speaks to the depth and talent of this team. I mean, I have seen in 10 years of SEC baseball, you know, LSU leading, you know, by 6-8 runs late in the game. And you're typically going to see 1-2 or possibly 3 pinch hitters in a row. And frankly, you just get the sense that, hey, this is an opportunity for a guy to get in at bat in a meaningful game. But, you know, you don't really think they're going to do anything. And rarely do they. And then I look at LSU this year when you've called upon Ashton Larson or even most recently Dalton Beck or even a Josh Pearson or a Jake Brown. I mean, the list goes on and on. They come in and you're kind of expecting things to happen. And that's a, you know, we saw that. Obviously, in that early morning win over Tennessee in game one, we saw a little bit of it. You know, I think of John Pearson, even though LSU lost game two, I mean, he's called a bond and he just yanks one out of the ballpark. And then again, we saw it again on Sunday. So that to me speaks volumes of how deep and talented this team is. And I think Jay's got a pretty good feel on when to push those buttons and pull those levers. But I really do believe, Don, down the stretch here, you're going to see pretty much a consistent lineup. And that really goes only because we kind of saw that in 22, we saw that in 23, and we saw it last year once you kind of get to this point of the season.
Coach Johnson has instituted what he calls a Magic Moment Award. And maybe a lot of fans that are listening right now are not familiar with that because it comes after the game and they may have already left the game or the broadcast. Explain what that is, what it's all about.
Well, Jay has always said since I've been around him that a game comes down to typically six or seven pitches, most games. And in those six or seven pitches, a play will be made either at the plate by the batter, the pitcher on the mound, or the defense in the field. And, you know, I think what he's trying to do, again, just to compliment guys on their achievement, and typically that magic moment is one of those pitches. Again, whether or not it's a huge strikeout when you've got the bases loaded and you're holding a one-run or two-run lead, we've seen that from time to time. It's been a clutch hit when the Tigers have runners in scoring position, or maybe they don't and you need a home run and you get that, or whether it's a web gem, you know, that kept runners from scoring. So it's just a chance for him to, you know, kind of let the guys celebrate. And also, kind of, again, it goes to that big team mentality that, yeah, we're going to single out this single play here, but it's going to change from game to game. And if you look at it and you watch it on social media, you'll typically see it's hard to get. You know, it's not as if Jay has kind of gotten to a comfortable groove that it's always going to be a big strikeout, or it's always going to be a big hit, or it's always going to be a big play. I mean, he's handed out a number of those, and there's been a number of different guys get it. And I think it's just, you know, it's his way of saying, hey, we do see you. It's a team concept, but there are times where players make extraordinary plays, and we want to honor you for that.
Yeah, it's a great tradition he started there. We're talking with Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers. And, Chris, you get to travel to a lot of stadiums, as you're doing today. I don't know if there's a better fan base, a more involved and active and supportive base than the LSU fan base. But give me some examples of some of the other universities that might be close.
Yeah, I mean, I think you start with Mississippi State, again, and that's just simply because I learned very quickly here that SEC baseball is quite different than the rest of the country. And, you know, sometimes myself included, we take that for granted. But I think a lot of the credit obviously goes to Skip Bertman. And you know, Mississippi State fans will tell you the opposite. But I believe that Ron Polk was a perfect foil to Skip Bertman. And that's not to take away from Coach Polk's winning success at Mississippi State. But I think you need Batman and you need the Joker. And I think for a lot of years, when the rest of college baseball was pretty much an afterthought, those two guys and their respect for one another, but their ribbing of one another, I think elevated the game. Not to mention that they had great players that went on to great careers in Major League Baseball. But I think Mississippi State has a great tradition. They certainly have a great, you know, venue now in the revamped Duty Noble. Texas A&M is a place that, you know, I don't doubt, you know, when we play this weekend, it'll be jam full for a couple of reasons. One, they played better here of late. And two, LSU's in town. And, you know, Texas A&M, no offense here, but they wake up every day trying to be LSU. So they'll be fired up for this. Tennessee's kind of a Johnny come lately. I mean, they went years and years and years without a lot of success, and credit Tony Vitello. I mean, since he took over, they have become one of the top programs in the country, and it's not the biggest stadium in the world, but it certainly can bring the noise. And then Arkansas at Mom Stadium. I mean, you know, you saw last night they were able to jump on Texas pretty quick, and that's a tough place to you know, be able to turn things around. So, I mean, there's, again, because of what Skip Bertman did at LSU, I mean, you're seeing it now. I mean, the weekend at Auburn, they had capacity crowds. So there's really not a whole lot of places in the SEC where baseball is not, you know, top of mind. And the facilities have all gotten better. But I agree with you. You'd be hard-pressed to find a better place that at 1:30 in the morning becomes electric like the box did, you know, when Jones walked it off.
Absolutely. Chris, stay with us. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. I'd like you to talk a little bit about tonight's matchup and the weekend's matchup, and also what the SEC tournament, how that's shaping up. We'll be right back. We're talking with Chris Blair. If you got a question or a comment, we welcome it on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, 504-260-1870. We're back right after this. I'm Don Dubuque, in for Newell Norman on WWL. And we're joined by Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers. He is en route as we speak to Bryan College Station to call the game. In fact, the three-game series with Texas A&M beginning tonight, pregame at 5:30, and then first pitch at 6 p.m. Chris, before we talk about the matchup with A&M and down the road looking at SEC contenders, I got an interesting question in from a listener. They wanted to know, do you think that Skip Berkman would have won as many titles in this age of college baseball? I guess he's talking about now with the clocks and the portal and the NIL and a lot of the differences now. I believe he would, because I think the guy was a natural-born innovator, and he would have made adjustments to those things to where he would continue to be a winner. What do you think?
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And the reason I say that, it's funny, we just had this conversation last week with the great Warren Morris. Warren joined us in the booth for an inning, and I asked Warren, I said, you know, you and I know now about all of the analytics and all of the data and the spin rate and exit velocity and bat angle. I mean, everything that by every pitch and every swing of the bat is now measured. And they have just these giant books of data on every team and every player and their tendencies. And I said, what's interesting is when I talk to the players who played for Skip, they talk about his system, which obviously didn't have that type of information, but what he did have, it wasn't just a gut feeling. I mean, he used the data that he saw either with his eye or watching an old VHS tape. You know, they talk about he kind of knew the tendencies of players, which again is quite remarkable. So for me, the fact that he was always kind of there on the cutting edge, you give a guy like Skip Berkman the information they have now, I think again, his development of players that you saw go on to have great careers at the next level, not to mention the fact they were incredible college players, you know, that still says a lot. I mean, for the baseball, even with the transfer portal, there's still a lot of weight for these guys who typically LSU is recruiting. All of these guys have the potential to sign professional contracts out of high school. There's a reason why they want to come to LSU to develop their skills, so that when they do decide to go to professional baseball, they get a little more leverage when it comes to the negotiating. And I think Skip was a master of that as well. So for all of those reasons, yeah, I think if you put a young Skip Berkman now as a head coach at, you know, whatever school you want to pick in Division I, yeah, I think he's going to be a winner, and he's probably going to have the same number of titles, if not more.
Mm-hmm. Another question, this one from a Mississippi listener, wants to know, what do you think of the one-and-done format at Hoover this year?
You know, I'm a little disappointed just simply because, again, I think you get more baseball, and I know there's more teams, so there's going to be, you know, more games. It's just, you know, how many great stories were there for teams that come there and it was, you know, this is my make or break. And you had that ability after the first round to hang around and, you know, possibly get even a rematch with the team that beat you first. I understand why they wanted all 16 teams to go. I still think there's an opportunity for teams to get there and make a magical run and maybe help their resume get them into a regional. So, I mean, that still exists. But I kind of like the old format. And, you know, not that I want a team punished for not winning enough games, because goodness knows every coach and every team's doing their best. It's, you know, it's almost like a reward when, you know, there's only a certain number that go. So, again, I hate to sound like the old guy that hates change, because I typically don't hate change. But I could have lived with the old format. But we'll see how it goes.
Looking at the current standings and the remainder of the schedule, your top four picks for the top positions in the SEC tournament, who would they be?
Ooh, yeah, I mean, I think Texas, at least up to this point, I know they struggled last night and got hammered by Arkansas, but, I mean, I think they obviously their consistency speaks volumes. So I think, you know, I mean, I think you're looking at Texas and Arkansas. I think LSU, obviously, and, you know, I think there's, and again, I don't know what particular order because there's three weekends remaining. But, I mean, I think when you look at consistency over the season, you know, I think those are the top three. I think your fourth spot, there's a number of candidates there. Obviously, Tennessee, they've struggled over the last three weekends, but there's no lack of talent on that team. You know, I think you can look at, you know, a Georgia. I tell you, the team that – that nobody has talked a lot about this year, and I think mainly for LSU, it's simply because they're not on our schedule. You know, I wouldn't throw dirt on Vanderbilt just yet either. But I think you've got your top three teams. I think there's probably going to be a closer battle for that fourth top seed, you know, when all is said and done. And frankly, you know, we were just talking in the car here moments ago. I mean, when you look at the number of SEC wins and where everybody stands, I think Texas A&M is a dangerous team, and I think Florida is a dangerous team for a couple of reasons. One, neither team has a lack of talent. Now, they've had some injuries that have had some guys on the shelf, but I think with three weekends remaining, mathematically, they still could cause some trouble. That's why I think these weekends, this particular weekend, is critical for Texas A&M, which makes me a little nervous. If LSU is able to be successful overall in the series, I think then that puts Texas A&M in a real tough spot mathematically. And for Florida, you know, they start the series against Pulmonary in South Carolina. I think the same thing is true. I think if South Carolina holds serve at home, that probably is all she wrote for a lot of the preseason goals for the Gators. But if they're able to somehow come out of this weekend a la, you know, Ole Miss from a couple of seasons ago, I think they've got the ability to be dangerous down the stretch, you know, not only in Hoover, but certainly once they get to a regional.
And your quickest one-minute forecast on this weekend series with A&M, what are we looking at?
Well, I think LSU's got to continue to do what they've done offensively. And I know, you know, going back to Auburn, Don, there's, you know, wow, that was such an outlier of a weekend where they struggled so mightily offensively. But, you know, it's a team that typically has batted, you know, 300-plus with runners in scoring position over the course of the season. And I think when you look at the last two games, the win against Tennessee and then the run rule against a very good Southeastern team, by the way, on Tuesday night, I mean, you kind of see LSU doing what LSU does and what you expect from a Jay Johnson offense. And, you know, I think that's going to be critical. The fact that they've been able to do it two games in a row, hopefully they carry that momentum over. Because they're going to have to score runs. You know, the Texas A&M-Texas series, you know, if you look at Texas A&M, Don, over the last four weekends, they won the series against Tennessee and Knoxville. They won a series against Arkansas and Fayetteville. They swept South Carolina, and then they lost all three to Texas in low-scoring one-run games. I kind of felt this way against Tennessee. I just didn't think three or four runs was going to be good enough to beat Tennessee each game. And I feel the same way against this weekend. I think the offense has to lead the way.
Should be very interesting, and we'll be tuned in. Thanks for joining us, Chris. As always, we appreciate it. Am I correct in assuming that this is your 10th year at LSU?
Yes, correct. 10th season, yeah.
Wow. How time flies, huh?
Time flies when you're having fun. Tight
yes,
lines until you're done. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. I will do that. Thank you very much. Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers. All right, we'll be right back after this to tell you what's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour of the Newell Norman Show. Thanks for joining us right here on the Big 870. And it's a good Friday morning to you. And coming up after the top of the hour break, we're going to be talking with a gentleman who is a U.S. Navy combat veteran, an outspoken advocate for the military. His name is Jim Blythe, and he hosts a podcast called The Veterans Impact Show. We're going to be talking to him about this increased recruitment that has been taking place most recently with the U.S. Army. They have enlisted 51,837 recruits, which represents about 85,000 of its 61,000 target for the fiscal year of 2025, and that's according to the data provided to military.com. And there's a reason for this, and we're going to talk to Jim about the big change and why is it become cool to become a listed man, and also about leadership and where the military is headed and what this means to the country and to the nation. So hope you'll be tuned in for that, and we'll have our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line open if you've got any comments about that. One thing I would like to throw out there for you veterans, if you were able to do it all over again, whether you were a draftee or an enlistee, was your time in the military well spent, and would you do it again, and why? You can call us at 504-260-187 or shoot us a text message at that same Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Something else we're going to be talking about too. To you, is it the Gulf of America or the Gulf of Mexico where the red snapper season opened yesterday? Yeah, according to Executive Order 1417, 2002, the Secretary of the Interior has officially adopted the name of Gulf of America. Will it remain Gulf of Mexico to you, or will you be talking to change? We'll talk about that, too. It's all right here on the Newell Norman Show. I'm Don Dubuque filling in. Thanks for joining us on the Big 870 WWL.